The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Gock and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 25th Psalm we hear, "Who are they that fear the Lord? He will teach them the way that they should choose." We return with much work to do, O Lord. Like the psalmist, we call for help that we might be faithful to the little things that have a way of producing much power and can be overwhelming. Teach us to use the small things to be of great service to your people in Missouri. Help us to provide laws that give power to the littlest so as to accomplish great things for all your people. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir.
Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Sirpoy, Crawford, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Eigel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Leibla, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
A quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 33rd day, Thursday, March 1st, 2018. The Senate...
General Cole, what purpose you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you recognize close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guests. Senator from Cole, what purpose you rise?
President, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have a great honor this morning or this afternoon to introduce special guests that are here with the USS Jefferson City, and this is a submarine that is our namesake. The Jefferson City was commissioned in 1992. The USS Jefferson City's home port is at Pearl Harbor Naval Station, and we are fortunate to have with us some of its finest. On my right, and a few are actually up with you, Mr. President, we have the commanding officer, Kevin Moeller, and then the chief of the boat, Mark Szymanski. Thank you, Mark. And I've been told the chief of the boat actually runs the boat, and the captain just sits around and watches what happens. But so thank you, Mark. Three crew members are with us, Petty Officer Aspen Sir, Petty Officer Rudy Garay, and Seaman Justin King, who I might add is also a native from here in Missouri, Pacific Missouri. Accompanying them are members of the USS Jefferson City Host Committee, Martin Thruston and Hal Dooley, along with our mayor, our very unenergetic mayor, who we're trying to get to be more active, Mayor Kerry Turgeon. Would you help me welcome these fine, honorable guests to the Missouri Senate?
Let's please welcome the guests from the Senator from Cole to the Missouri Senate Chamber. Introduction of guests. Senator from Barrie, what purpose you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to introduce a special guest.
Senator, you may proceed.
Mr. President, on your right and on my left, sitting over here on the bench, is a good friend of mine, a constituent from Barrie County. He lives somewhere between Aurora and Jenkins. I'm not exactly which one is closer. But he's very involved in the Farmers Association throughout the state of Missouri. And so anyway, I'd like to ask him to stand and be welcome today.
Let's please welcome the guest from the Senator from Barry and a cattle farmer to the state of the Senate chamber. Introduction of guest. Hearing none. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petition, Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to request a point of personal privilege.
The Senator from the 24th has requested a point of personal privilege. The Senate will come to order. Senator from the 24th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this afternoon, as we begin our business of the day, we need to take a moment to remember Peter Wang, who was a victim of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas mass shooting on February 14th. Peter was 15 years old, not even old enough yet to drive. He was last seen on Wednesday wearing his gray ROTC uniform and holding a door open so other people could escape, said his cousin, Aaron Chen, holding the door open so his fellow students and teachers could escape. Aaron Chen, his cousin, later confirmed in an interview with First Coast News that Wang himself had been killed. He wasn't supposed to die, Chen said. He was supposed to grow old with me. Mr. President, for all of these young people and for their teachers who will never grow any older, and in memory of Peter Wang, I request that the chamber rise for a moment of silence.
Would the members of the Senate please rise for a moment of silence? The Senate is on the order of business of petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Hearing none. Resolutions. Resolutions. Hearing none. Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Hearing none. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senate will go the order of business of bills, Senate bills for perfection, and I'd ask that you call the calendar.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills on perfection. First up is Senate Bill 800, Senator from Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 800 be taken up for perfection.
The Senator from Butler has moved that Senate Bill number 800 be taken up for perfection. Is many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Butler.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 800 be declared perfected and ordered printed.
The Senator from Butler moves that Senate Bill number 800 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator, do you care to explain your bill?
I do. Thank you, Mr. President. The goal of Senate Bill 800 is to help a child find a safe, loving, and stable home without unnecessary delays. Senate Bill 800 will allow a private attorney or a guardian ad litem to file both the petition for adoption and petition to terminate the parental rights together. This will shorten the length of time a child spends in care. Currently, Mr. President, there is sometimes a lag between when the termination of parental rights is filed and when the adoption petition is filed. Allowing both of these motions to be filed at the same time will keep the process moving forward without delay, which many times keeps a child in limbo for an extended period of time. Mr. President, this bill only changes cases where a parent consents to adoption one of two ways: a consent to specific adoption where the adoptive family is known, or a waiver of consent to adoption where the adoptive family is unknown. This does not change the process for a contested adoption. With that, Mr. President, I'll be glad to take any questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 800? Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
To offer an amendment. I ask a waiver of the reading. It has been distributed.
Please send your amendment forward. Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator, do you care to move for the adoption of the amendment and proceed to explain your amendment?
I move for the adoption to explain it. This is identical to a bill I had that passed 7-0 in committee. It's trying to fix a situation when a woman is raped and there's a child that's conceived. If termination of parental rights happens, that mother is in a situation where she can't seek public benefits or she has to go get child support from the father, but can't in a situation of when termination of parental rights happens. So it's trying to open up options for that mother where, in a situation where rape has happened, and allow that mother to seek those public benefits or get child support. So with that, I move for its adoption.
Does any senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 1? Senator from the 1st, what purpose do you rise?
Here, the senator from the 15th.
Senator from the 15th, you yield to the inquiry from the senator from the 1st.
Yes.
Senator from the 1st, you may proceed.
Senator, I appreciate that your amendment had a unanimous committee vote. As I stand here, I'm not sure I recall what committee, if I'm on the committee.
Children and Families.
Okay, yeah, and I don't serve on that committee, so I haven't seen this, and I'm just going to have a few questions for you to make sure that I understand what we're doing here. I may inquire the senator from Butler after that. So as I look through your amendment, I don't see any changes in statute until page 9. Does that sound right to you?
That's correct.
Okay. And on page 9, we're adding language saying a court of competent jurisdiction may terminate the parental rights of a biological father of a child if he's an alleged perpetrator of forcible rape or rape in the first degree that resulted in the conception and birth of the child. So I understand what we're doing there. All right, I get that. So the next sentence gives the mother the right to bring the TPR, and is it your intent that the mother or her guardian, if she's a minor, be the only person withstanding to bring the TPR in that situation?
Correct.
Okay. And then the court has to find clear, cogent, and convincing evidence the biological father committed the act of forcible rape. Same for child conceived as a result of the rape. And then preponderance of the evidence, determination of parental rights of the biological father is in the best interest of the child. All right. And then you got another page or two of new law here. And forgive me, I just want to go through it.
Sure.
I understand the spirit of what we're trying to accomplish, and I'm pretty confident that I support that. So then we go into procedures for the TPR. Court of competent jurisdiction may order the mother and the child conceived and born as a result of forcible rape entitled to obtain from the biological child support, basically, is what we're talking about.
We're dealing with child support there.
Beneficiary designation. So you contemplate a scenario where the rapist's parental rights are terminated but still on the hook for support.
Correct. See, and currently, if parental rights were terminated, that mother can't go get child support.
Right. So. Right. No, I absolutely. And so, yeah, I understand what you're trying to do with that. All right. The court shall issue such order only if mother gives her consent, provided the court shall first inform the mother. Yeah, no custody. Got it. Payment for the reasonable expense of the mother child related to pregnancy, child support. Let me ask this. Going back to the initial provision, the court has to conclude that there was a rape and that there was conception.
That would benefit the child if basically the father.
Right, you know. Right. So does there actually have to be a conviction of the crime of rape in order for this language to be operative? I can tell you what my belief is of the language, but I want to understand your intent.
I would say no.
Which is to say...
But it's the same standard that we might use to terminate parental rights in other cases today.
And I understand that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I want to make sure it's clear that folks understand that you can have a situation where there is a rape, results in a birth, and There's no conviction for that rape, but it's proved in family court that a rape occurred.
Correct.
And termination of parental rights with support and other obligations can be forthcoming from that without the criminal process being involved. Correct. Now, that being said, I think it's fair to say that family law judges take this stuff awfully seriously, and they're going to want to see strong evidence, maybe not beyond a reasonable doubt as the criminal standard, but I don't envision judges doing this lightly.
Correct.
All right. So going back into the procedure that you set out here, mother has to consent to the order. I get that. Child support, probate rights. So you're contemplating that whatever inheritance rights the child would have vis-a-vis the father would still have, right? You're nodding. Okay, so that's good. And then designation of the child as a beneficiary to life or accidental death policy, got that. So the can't ensure the life for a windfall. And then any other beneficiary designations is in the best interest. Got it. All right. So if she doesn't want a court order for support, no state agency to require her to do so to receive public assistance. Got it. Court order terminating the parental rights of the biological father shall serve as a sufficient basis for good cause. Shall not require the mother or child otherwise prove identify, locate, income, assets, biological father. Got it. Let me ask you about that. Pages 11 to 12, we say that your
amendments... Yeah, we're basically giving the mother the choice. If she... Because if she does go after child support, you know, that there may be some additional contact she might have with, you know, the rapist.
Right.
And if she chooses that she doesn't want to go down that road, we basically want to make sure it's her choice and that she would still be allowed to get public benefits.
Got it. Senator, thank you for answering my questions. I'm going to inquire of a couple other senators who I think may serve on that committee and or may have knowledge relevant to the subject. So I'm not going to take too long with this, but I do want to make sure I've heard from some folks. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 1st, are you still seeking recognition?
Yes, Mr. President. May I inquire the Senator from the 24th?
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 1st.
I do.
Senator from the 1st, you may proceed.
Senator, are you on the Children and Family Committee?
I am.
And you voted for this amendment in committee?
I did.
And you support the amendment?
Well, I'm sorry.
You know what? That's gauche. I'm sorry. I've just committed a faux pas.
Yes, that's okay.
I'll ask it this way. Is there a whole lot more to the conversation than what you've heard so far?
So why don't you walk through that again with me? Because I was actually reading another bill.
I understand.
At the time you were doing your input.
I'm going to be up on the next one, too, and
yes.
I know how it goes. Long story short, this is the rapists can have parental rights terminated, trying to protect the mother and make sure that she's provided for.
Right. And the way that I recall the bill being explained in the committee, and I'm sure the sponsor of the amendment can correct me if I'm wrong, but was that we didn't want the mother who was going to go ahead and carry this child to term to not have access to funds she may need because she couldn't get the father, the rapist, if you will, to agree to terminate his rights. So if she was receiving, because that is part of how some of this state funding to help low in public assistance to help with public assistance for low-income people occurs is based on no other access to funds. So my recollection and understanding was that it would take that out of the equation so that this mother, this pregnant woman, could receive access to funding from the state.
Very
good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does, and that's helpful. And I'll just note, you know, it's March 5th, 2018, and if I'm not mistaken, I think I just heard both you and the senator from the 15th talk about this being a pretty good idea.
Right.
I just want to note that, Senator. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President, may I inquire the senator from the 2nd?
Senator from the 1st. Senator from the second, you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the first.
I do.
Senator from the first, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, am I imagining that you serve on the Children and Family Committee?
I do not.
You do not? I'm sorry.
And I'm not terribly familiar with this bill.
Got it.
So I'm listening to the discussion.
Got it. Well, I will let you continue to listen. I thought for some reason, in my mind's eye, I had you on that committee,
and
Senator.
I'm digging through my papers for a copy of the amendment. Do we have it yet?
We do.
It should be here somewhere? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I'll look at that, but I'd be happy to talk to you about it a little later after
sure.
I've done a little bit of work here. But
got
yeah,
it. Well, and I don't know if other senators are going to have questions about it, but I am satisfied that we have kicked the tires sufficiently thoroughly. I don't know if other senators want to ask about it, but thank you for yielding to my inquiry,
okay,
Senator.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 1? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the first.
Senator from first, you yield to an inquiry from Senator from Buchanan.
I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
You know, I want to kick the tires a little bit.
Okay.
On page 9 of the
yeah.
bill, it talks about an alleged perpetrator.
Yep.
Well, when I read that, the first thing that comes to my mind is, what's to stop someone from saying, oh, this pregnancy was the result of a rape, allege that, and bang, you know, you've got an alleged perpetrator, a potentially not really a perpetrator, and now instead of having, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, you've got the standard of clear, cogent, and convincing.
Well, true. However, that beats the civil standard of preponderance of the evidence. So there are three standards generally. Preponderance of the evidence is basically 51-49. It's just got to be more likely to be true than not. It's the most lenient of the three standards. Beyond a reasonable doubt is the, you know, 99-1. We got to be all but certain, but you know, can't have reasonable doubt. Clear and convincing is the middle standard, and you know, what I'll say is that it's unusual in family court proceedings for the standard to be something other than preponderance of the evidence. So this is a tougher standard than most questions that's going to come before the family court. On the other hand, is it the same standard that would be applied to the same action to decide to incarcerate that person? The answer is no, but it is a heightened standard.
But I just have to tell you that for some people, having the right to see your own child is just as bad as throwing him in prison. I mean, you're denying this person the right to see their child. I mean, and based upon the allegation of one person who may have, you know, made this allegation, I mean,
you got to prove it in court and convince a judge of it, though.
Perpetrator, you know?
I mean, you've got to prove it in court and convince a judge by a heightened standard that it was a rape in order for that result to follow. There are going to be cases. Where it's not even contested. And I'll submit that there are going to be a lot of these cases where there's a criminal conviction of the rapist, and this legislation will apply to those cases. So I hear your concern, but I'll also say, if you want to, you know, spend time with your kid, don't conceive the kid through forcible rape. I mean,
that's not the point. The point of it is if you don't conceive your kid through forcible rape, but you do something to, you know, upset the mom, and the mom then says, oh, it was forcible rape. And by the way, exactly what is clear and cogent evidence? I mean, like, let's just say that she goes to court and says, he raped me. And the man says, I did not rape her. I mean, does the court say that is clear, cogent, and convincing?
No, there's got to be more, far more than that.
Like, give me an example of what more there might have to be.
Well, first of all, I think where this is going to, in the real world where this is going to play out, the first exhibit is going to be the judgment in the criminal case where a conviction was entered that a rape occurred.
But let's just, so what I'm trying to say here is that there is the potential here for no conviction because it wasn't beyond a reasonable doubt,
right,
but yet still be clear and convincing.
Potentially, and I'll say it this way. I think a judge sitting in a family court with these allegations in front of himself or herself, the first question is going to be, well, if this was a rape, you know, was it prosecuted? If it was prosecuted and there was a conviction, well, that's one thing. It prosecuted, no conviction. Theoretically, there are going to be cases that could clear and convincing, but not beyond reasonable doubt, but they're going to be very few and far between. And I think a trial court, family court judge is going to be very careful.
Well, didn't we see that? This was a different matter, but we saw that in O.J. Simpson.
He was not.
I mean, it was exactly that situation.
Different standard, though. No proof beyond a reasonable doubt on the criminal complaint, but found to be civilly liable under the preponderance of the evidence standard, not the clear and convincing evidence standard in this bill. But your point is correct. Theoretically, there can be cases where the jury acquits and a family law judge nonetheless finds that the clear and convincing standard is met. There aren't going to be 1,000 of those, and there might not even be one of them. But theoretically, there could be, and you make a fair point in that regard. At the same time, I don't know that you want to ask a family court judge to apply the criminal law standard. Another approach would be to, it's a fair question to say, should there have to be a conviction? The problem with that, I don't want to speak for the senator from the 15th on this, but my guess is he would say that there are going to be cases where the victim might feel intimidated, threatened, really worried about the kid or harm befalling her or the kid, and make the understandable election not to press criminal charges, but to bring the TPR. And again, that's not going to be 100 out of 100 people, but my guess is, again, that it's probably going to be more than zero that make that election to not push it in criminal court, but to push it in family court. And I'll also say, too, I mean, there are cases, and some would argue that the O.J. Simpson case was one, where there are evidence spoliation issues or chain of custody issues that creates a problem for meeting proof beyond a reasonable doubt, where nonetheless the evidence could be clear and convincing. But sometimes.
Right now, if you're convicted of rape, you don't necessarily lose your right to see the child, right?
Not necessarily. That is the harm that the amendment is intended to address, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what exactly does the amendment do? Because I don't see the amendment.
The amendment basically states that if the child was conceived by rape and it can be proven that... and by the way, there is preponderance of evidence for the TPR question itself, but the fact of the rape has to be by clear and convincing. But then it basically provides that doesn't vitiate the father's responsibility for the child financially, and I think that that's as it should be. So this is about holding rapists accountable for their crimes and trying to protect the children who are born as a result of that. And look, this is an issue that's very visceral to a lot of people from a lot of different angles, but I think what the senator from the 15th is trying to do here is protect and provide for children who, let's face it, women who find themselves in these situations make all different kinds of decisions, and I think for the women that want to do everything they can to provide for this child and to hold their rapist accountable for doing so, I think this amendment allows for that. And I think about the 182,000 people who I represent, they don't agree on every issue, but I think most of them would feel pretty strongly that this is something we ought to do.
Well, the thing is I absolutely think that if you've raped someone, you probably shouldn't expect to, have a relationship with the child.
Right.
I mean, that I think we all agree on. The question is, what should be the wording in the law? And so,
sure.
So, you know, there are kind of two steps here. Step one would be, if you're convicted of rape, then you shouldn't, you know, have contact with the child. Or we should protect the mother and the child from you because, I mean, you're a rapist.
Well, but at the very least, the mother should have the option.
Right. Right. Okay. That's fine. But the second step is this step, which is alleged. Now, all of a sudden, you're using that second level of standard. And so, really, I mean, a halfway step, which would be an improvement in the law, would be to just say, once you're convicted, that's it. This step gives me a little heartburn because of the, as we said, I mean, there's always the possibility that clear and convincing, you know, will catch some people that shouldn't be caught.
You know, Senator, let me just ask you this. I hear you just said it again, and you started your inquiry with this. I think the words "and alleged" on lines 28 to 29 and page 9 of the amendment are causing you heartburn that I'm not sure that the rest of the language is. And I don't want to hang this up. I want to get this done. So let me just suggest to you that, you know, maybe there's a way to address that to your satisfaction, because I understand your concern about, you know, mere allegation, but the standard of proof on the next page is a tougher one, and I think it's sufficient to protect the interests of men who are alleged of rape who contest that allegation, as is their right to do so, and that's what we have courts for. But I think that the harm that the senator's amendment is intended to address is sufficiently great, and the importance of what he's trying to do is sufficiently great, that frankly, I don't mind tweaking words if it helps people feel more comfortable, but this is one that I'd almost rather err on the side of action than caution on. I mean, I hate to say that, but I'd rather than excessive caution, I guess I'll say. I think this is something we need to do.
Well, perhaps. It all hinges on whether or not you're going to not, you know, to catch too many people by using this clear, cogent, and convincing evidence and not the other. And I have to point out to you that the termination of parental rights is on the preponderance of the evidence standard.
Well, and that's as it is normally. Let me suggest this. I hear what you're saying. I hear what some of your concerns are. And I'm happy to continue answering your questions. But I think where we find ourselves, a conversation between you and the senator from the 15th might be more productive at this point. I'm happy to keep talking, but I want to make sure that we're being productive.
Okay.
And I do want to find a way to get this done.
Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator Buchanan, we'll approach your eyes.
Inquire the senator from the 15th.
Senator from the 15th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Buchanan.
Yes.
Senator, you may proceed.
Senator, you heard my inquiry of the senator from the 1st, and so tell me why we need to put in alleged and not, like, have it be that if you're convicted of rape, why that's why we should stop your rights. What you're doing here is you're creating a situation where he could be accused of rape, be found innocent, and still lose his parental rights.
No, if he's, well, in a criminal court, I guess that potentially could happen. But,
well, I mean, are you going to allow someone to have their parental rights taken away if the woman did not at least accuse him criminally?
The problem is we have very few rape cases are actually prosecuted.
I wouldn't want to be accused of rape in the civil court and say, well, did you accuse him of rape to the police? And she goes, no. And then say, well, but we're going to go ahead and take away your parental rights anyway.
Well, I mean, there's still a pretty high standard still.
Well, it's just preponderance of the evidence as far
no,
as...
Well, no, not for the rape itself. It's clear, cogent, and convincing evidence. And then it has to be a preponderance of evidence if it's in the best interest of the child to not be with the father. So the father could have committed the rape.
Isn't that going to be a matter of opinion?
Senator from the 15th, you cannot turn your back on the dais. Senator, you may proceed.
Okay. So I'll try to remember to remind you if I see you doing that, yeah. The thing is, you know, what you're doing here is you're creating a situation where the mother could say, well, I don't like him, and I didn't tell the police that he raped me, but now I'm going to go to court and I'm going to try to cut him out of seeing the child and say that he's a rapist, and the court says, well, I'm pretty convinced. I don't exactly know a scenario whereby the judge decides that something's clear and convincing. I'm not an expert enough. But it's always going to come down to her word versus his word, isn't it?
Well, if that's the case, then that would not be clear, cogent, and convincing evidence.
Well, really, I mean, have you put in there... I mean, if that's the case, would you be willing to put in a sentence that says, in a case where the mother says he did and the father says he didn't, that will not constitute clear and convincing evidence? Would you be willing to put that in there?
I mean, that doesn't sound like it would be harmful to me. Because, I mean, because you can't just go on a he said, she said. There has to be other evidence.
Like what? What other evidence?
Well, you could have...
A rape kit?
You have a rape kit? Sure. We actually have thousands of rape kits.
So you have a rape kit, and he says, oh, we had sex, but it was consensual. And she says, no, it was rape. So the rape kit proves that, you know, they did have sex. So what other evidence? I mean, what other evidence is going to come into play? And if there is no scenario that you can think of, then why not make it, you know, like you're convicted of rape?
Well, it could be that the mother didn't want to go through a trial in a criminal court. Or it could be, like I said, we have numerous rape kits that don't even get processed.
Well, I guess what the thing is that when we make laws that contemplate taking children away from fathers, you know, I say that's...
So what about now when we terminate parental rights?
Well, like I would say, I'm with you on saying if you're convicted of rape, by gollies, I'm with you 100%. I have no problem if you're convicted of rape. But when you just say, okay, we're empowering the mom to say, he raped me.
But what about when they terminate parental rights today? Do they go through a criminal court?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Do they go through a criminal court when they terminate parental rights today?
Well, I would say I'm...
In the foster care system. Do they go through a criminal
court? I'm having trouble hearing you, Senator.
Do they go through a criminal court today?
Right.
The Senate will come to order. Will senators please take your conversations to the side galleries or the rear of the chamber? Senators, you may proceed.
So you said if they go through a criminal court...
I said, do they go through a criminal court in all cases today when terminating parental rights?
Well, I don't know, but the thing is, you're creating a new law where all she has to do is allege rape. She alleges rape,
clear, cogent, and convincing evidence... And then there has to be a preponderance of evidence that it would actually harm the kid if he saw his dad.
Okay, but the thing is, tell me what clear and convincing is other than just her word. That's what I'm wanting to know.
Well, if it's just her word, that would not satisfy the clear, cogent, and convincing evidence.
Well, I'd feel much better about your bill if that were written in there. If it's just a case of his word versus her word, that's not clear and convincing. Would you be willing to put that in there?
Sure.
Because now all of a sudden I know that there is something there that, like, I honestly don't know enough about clear and convincing evidence to know that, like, what if it was the judge and the judge listens to her and says, I rate her credibility is really high. I like her. I like the way she talks. and looks at him and says, I rate his credibility as low because, you know, he doesn't use good English, and so, you know, he's kind of a, you know, hayseed or whatever. Like, no. I mean, I don't know what the judge is going to say there. Okay, but let me change topics. On page 12, lines 2 through 5, okay, you say that the state agency shall not require the mother or the child to otherwise provide the identity, location, income, or assets of the biological father. You know, I've always been bothered by this. Like, why don't we make her tell? I mean, if you're expecting the rest of us citizens to pay the tab for something that this guy does, why not make her tell? Because I really don't want to pay the tab for this guy as a citizen.
Well, I mean, the problem is you're requiring the mother who has been raped to get in contact with the person that raped her. I see that as problematic.
Well, since we already are in court with this whole bill, and he's saying you're putting in this clear and convincing evidence, and the judge is going to decide, and everybody knows that she's gone to court here, it's not like... It's not like everybody doesn't already know. So what I'm trying to say is...
This is a bill that you voted on in committee.
Well, I may have voted on it in the past, but I have, like, swallowed hard when I voted on that in the past. I never really liked doing it, and I was probably supporting somebody. And so I just wonder why we have to have that language in there. Like,
I just told you why, because it doesn't make sense if a woman gets raped by someone to force them to be put in contact with the person that raped them.
Well, why would they be in contact?
Well, because
because
you're requiring her to identify the location, income, and assets of the biological father.
Okay, but wait, that sentence has got lots of parts. It says, shall not require the mother to otherwise provide the identity, location, income, or assets, or have contact or communicate. I'm good with have contact or communicate with. Like, leave that in there. But make him pay. Make him pay child support. I really don't want her to be able to excuse him.
We can't. The problem is, without this bill, we can't do that. We can't. The mother cannot. If we terminate parental rights today on a father, all right, she can't get child support from him.
Really? So this bill allows the state to get the child support.
If it's in the case where the mother chooses to go down that road.
Yeah. Hey, I misunderstood the intent of that sentence. But does this sentence on page 12, that last paragraph there, does this basically say that...
This says that if the mother's seeking public benefits, that she wouldn't necessarily have to be required to contact the father or get the location or the income
doesn't she have to get the child support?
No, we're making that optional. Right now there's no choice. She can't today the way the law stands, she doesn't have a choice to do that. If this bill passes, then she would have the choice to either get child support or get public benefits.
Why don't we require her to get child support in order to get
the reason why we don't require her to get child support is because we don't want to force her in a situation where she has to be in contact with the rapist again.
Well, why don't we say that she has to get child support but doesn't have to be in contact with him? I mean, that...
Well, I don't know how that system would work today.
Well,
I
mean, you just write it into the law. You just say, in order to get public benefits, the woman has to... You know, try to get child support, but she will not be required to have communication with the rapist, the father. Well, I mean, couldn't you just write that in there?
Yeah, I mean, when you're dealing with child support, you have court proceedings that occur. So, are you asking they do it, or?
Well, let me ask you this way: why should I, as a citizen, pay for her public benefits when she herself is not going after the father, given that I am protecting her from having to have this contact or communication? Why should I do that? Why do you want to put that on me?
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Okay, well, if you understand it, then answer and tell me, would you be willing to, like, maybe modify that a little bit?
I mean, if there's a way to do it, I would be open to it. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's how I feel about it. I don't know if anybody else in the chamber feels that way about it. I never really did like to have to pay more taxes so that that could occur. But I do know that that is the way it is. I just never liked it. I think that, you know, sorry, I just don't want to have to do that. But thank you for the inquiry, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton.
He's over there talking to the senator from the second.
Senator from Barton. Senator from Barton, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senate from Buchanan?
I do, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Okay, Senator. So this underlying bill doesn't have anything to do with this rape situation. And this amendment does. This amendment is creating law saying that if the mother alleges rape, that the father could have, using clear and convincing standard, the right to see, you know, have contact taken away. So my question to you is that just and right? Is, in your opinion, because I looked over at you as I was speaking to them, and you had a look on your face of concern, like maybe you were understanding what I was saying.
Well, I think I agree with you, and I think the senator from the 15th would agree as well, Senator, that fatherhood is something we need to take very seriously, and parental rights are something we need to take very seriously. I was in the process, I was listening intently because I wanted to find out what the discussion was, and I wasn't sure whether there was a concern that needed to elevate my attention or not. I at the time, while you were talking, I read through the language, and it looked to me like it was pretty tightly structured. Now, I'm not an attorney, but just reading the subparagraphs 1, 2, and 3, if that's where your focus is, it seems to me like it's very likely that it was indeed a forcible act for it to qualify and for the parental rights to be separated. So I don't know that my concern has reached yours, but I do think we need to take the parental rights very seriously.
Well, let me ask this to sharpen it up a little bit. If you have a case where the mother says it was rape and the father says it was not rape, could that be taken by the court as clear, convincing, and cogent evidence?
Well, you have to take that along with the preponderance of the evidence.
No. First of all, they have to decide whether or not the father committed the act of forcible rape,
right,
or rape in the first degree. So there's evidence presented, and the mother says he raped me, and the father says no, I didn't. Is that good enough under any circumstances to be clear, cogent, and convincing for the judge?
I guess my opinion would be no, but
But you don't know, do you?
I haven't talked to an attorney. If I was an attorney, I probably would be more confident of whatever opinion I held. And I wasn't listening to your entire conversation with the senator from the first, so I don't know if you dove into that with him or not.
Well, it didn't go... It was just basically that his opinion was that it was okay in his mind. But the question that I have is, if mother says yes and father says no, do you have to have a witness that says, I heard screaming in the back room? Or do you have to have... You have to have just at least one other piece of information, don't you?
I would think you need something for it to be evidence. I mean, this says evidence, not opinion. Wouldn't that make a difference?
The reason that I'm asking you this is if you can't answer that, yes, there has to at least be one other piece of evidence, then what you've done here is you've created a situation where mother could say, I don't like this father. I want him out of my life. I don't ever want to see him again. I don't want him ever to see my child. So I'm just going to say that it's rape. He's going to say it's not. We'll go to court. And if there's any possibility that the judge can say, well, that's enough, you know, then this is not okay.
Well, and I don't think that would happen. I'm again, Senator, I'm always a little cautious about giving legal opinions without knowing exactly what the law says. But when this says evidence, it doesn't say testimony. It doesn't say clear, cogent, and convincing testimony. It says clear, cogent, and convincing evidence.
But evidence
has a significant and probably very definitive meaning in the law. Well, and it would take something beyond just a person's testimony.
No, testimony is evidence. Testimony is evidence. Like the evidence was, he said... The evidence was, she said. The thing is if you don't know for sure, then
are you given a legal definition of evidence?
No, I'm just telling you that testimony is a form of evidence.
I don't think that's right. I don't think that's accurate because evidence is something beyond testimony.
Well, yes, I would say that testimony is a subset of evidence.
I don't know that has a legal meaning, but I would not consider testimony as evidence, and I don't think you could convict anyone on testimony without evidence.
Okay. Well, we have a disagreement on that, but that doesn't matter. Okay. Let's look at that last page, page 12. Okay, lines 1 through 5. And basically it's saying that we're not going to require the mother to try to get child support in order to get,
All right, I read through that assistance. Once, and I'm not sure I've completely grasped that section, so I'm happy to walk through that with
it's
you.
It's actually lines 5 through 9. It says, nothing in this subsection shall prohibit a state agency from requesting that the mother assign any child support rights she receives under this subsection to the state as a condition or receipt of public assistance benefits. So to have her say that we request,
right,
you know, but that doesn't mean that she has to.
There's no force there, right?
Yeah, there's no force. Like, I feel like if she wants to get public assistance, she ought to say who did it and go after that person. Like, right. I don't really want to be on the hook for the public assistance for a woman who won't, like, go after her own child support. Make the father pay. I don't know if you feel the same way as I.
Okay, but this is requesting. All right, nothing this requesting that the mother assign child support rights to the state, condition of receiving the public assistance. I'm not sure I understood your question, because this is just saying that the agency can request that she assign the value to a state agency, but she doesn't have to. So I'm not sure where this, what the point is you're making there, Senator.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what it says. When you read that sentence, that starts with however.
Right.
It says, nothing in this subsection shall prohibit the state agency from requesting, and then it says, as a condition of receipt.
Right.
So, you know, what I really want to do is not prohibit them. I want to require them to do it.
Right, I understand, and that's a clear distinction between whether it's forceful or not forceful, and I understand that, and I don't know that I have the answer to that. I don't know. Did you inquire the senator from the 15th as to why that was requested?
I think that I have a feeling that it's just the politically correct thing to do.
Well, and I think also, I guess another question I would have there, Senator, is that I don't know who they're requesting this of. It sounds to me, the way I read it, they're asking the mother. Oh, it says requesting. Yeah, it just says that the mother. They're asking the mother to assign the support. It's also would be possible, I think, to read that they're requesting the agency that the mother assign the support. I don't know how that gets complicated in terms of the agency saying, look, we would ask the court to make the mother do this.
Well, I guess what I would like to know from you is, how do you feel about the state requiring that the mother find out and get the child support in order to get public benefits?
Right. I don't know. You know, once it's in the court, the rules change. And I think that's when once we enter that jurisdiction, there are a lot of things that I think we have to look at a little bit differently. If this was just the state walking into someone's house, obviously they shouldn't do that. But they're in the jurisdiction of the state at this point. They've entered that jurisdiction. And I think what this is intending, and without conversation with the senator from the 15th, I'm just speculating. My guess is this is saying that if the mother really was a problem and they didn't trust her to administer these benefits correctly, that the agency, which would not have the power to make the mother do this, would request the court to make her do it. Now, it's not clear. In my opinion, that's not clear here. But I would think that would make sense, because the only reason for request is because the agency has no power, I think. And okay. Again, we may have to inquire.
Well, I think that you've helped me at least see my little problem here. So I thank you for your inquiry.
You're welcome, Senator. Appreciate the conversation.
Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
Inquire the senator from the second.
Senator from the second. Senator from the second does not appear to be in the chamber. Sergeant of Arms, please summons the senator from the second. Senator from the second, do you yield to the inquiry from the Senator from Buchanan?
I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Okay, well, Senator, the senators from the first and the second are our two attorneys.
Yes.
So I'm wanting to get an understanding from you of what it means to have a clear, cogent, and convincing standard. And is it possible, under any scenario, that you would have a mother saying that the father conceived the child, you know, as a result of rape,
right,
have that be the only evidence and have that meet the clear, cogent, and convincing standard?
You know, I think that would be a decision for the trier of fact. And I think as the senator from the first said in an earlier inquiry, that there's, you know, the criminal standard, which is beyond reasonable doubt. There's the usual civil standard, which is preponderance of the evidence, which is sometimes described as a scale. If there's you're in balance, just a slight tipping of the scale to one side, that's enough. So to prove that, you know, I was at fault when I hit you in an auto accident, you know, just a 51 or a 50.001 percent chance that I was at fault as opposed to you, that's enough in a civil lawsuit. I'm not as familiar with the standard of clear, cogent, and convincing evidence. I don't know what those jury instructions look like, for instance.
Well, first of all, can we at least confirm that testimony is a subset of evidence.
Oh, sure it is. Yeah.
Okay, so for the Senate, for the benefit of the senator from Barton, if he's listening, which he's not. Senator from Barton, are you listening? The senator from the second confirms that testimony is a subset of evidence. Just so that we get that clear.
Yeah, probably the most common kind of evidence.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, let's say an auto accident. I mean, you can have photos of the car with the dent. You can have photos of the senator from Buchanan wearing a neck brace. You could have copies of the medical bills. But some of the most important evidence is your testimony, my testimony, the bystander's testimony.
You could have evidence that the father had 10 years ago been convicted of rape.
That could be evidence,
too. Okay, but the question that I have for you, because it occurs to me that any time you use the word alleged, I mean, that's the standard. The mother alleges it, then she goes to court. So I'm just saying, if you can meet the standard, if the trier of fact listens to her, listens to him, weighs the credibility of the two, and says the mother is more credible, so therefore that's clear, cogent, and convincing, and so he loses his child contact rights as a result, I got a problem with that. I would like to make sure that clear, cogent, and convincing is something more than just he says, she says.
Right.
What's your opinion on that? Because I'm going to put a lot of value in what you say.
Yeah, well, you know, this is why, and probably you'd probably have to talk to someone who's a lot more familiar with these kind of cases, you know, prosecutors who try rape cases or counselors and, you know, crisis people who work in this field, social workers who specialize in this field. Clearly in most rape cases, the major evidence is going to be the testimony of the victim. Now, often you'll have medical testimony as well. You'll have what was collected in the emergency room, the results of the rape kits, and all that sort of thing. So,
well, if the father is trying to get his child support, I mean his child visitation rights.
Right. Right.
There's no doubt that he's the father. I mean, he's admitted.
Yeah, yeah.
They've had sex.
Yeah. No.
I can envision a case where she is tearful, crying, gives a very credible story about how she was raped. The father, he testifies to the judge and says, "I'm indignant. I did not rape her." And the judge looks at her crying and his indignance and says, "I believe her." And I just don't ever want to be part of making a law that creates this potential because, hey, we've seen it happen where women don't want that father around. I could envision them saying this was rape just in order to get rid of him because he's a lowlife or whatever she, in her mind. You see what I'm saying here?
Well, sure. I think false accusations do happen in family law cases, divorce cases, child support cases, and so on. That happens. That's a reality.
Well, are you confident that this is good enough? I mean, we're making a law here that could hurt people. I mean, this could come back to hurt some men who father children and their... You know, the mothers of their children say it was rape, and now we've created this clear and convincing standard. Are you good with this? And if you are, I tend to put a lot of stock in what you say.
Yeah.
But if you're not,
I'm wondering whether are there examples of these sorts of cases that led the sponsor of the amendment to file this bill. And I assume it was filed as a standalone bill.
I didn't know that this amendment was coming. I just suddenly have this amendment. And
right.
I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, I don't know that I like this amendment. If this amendment said that to have somebody who was convicted of rape, now all of a sudden I'm going like, he's a rapist, he was convicted, like, don't right. let him see his kids. That's fine.
Right.
But this is alleged. Right. This is...
Right. Yeah, I mean, I wonder whether this... Yeah, obviously, this is why we have hearings, committee hearings and all that. And I don't sit on the Children and Families Committee, so...
Well, I do, and you know something? I probably voted to get this out of committee, not realizing, you know, taking a closer look at it. And
do you recall any of the testimony on this bill?
I don't really. Might have been a little late that day or something. I think that's probably what happened.
No, I don't know if you want to visit with the senator for the 15th and go into the rationale for this amendment.
Already did that. The only question is like what I am down to, is the clear, cogent, and convincing good enough in this case? Yeah. Will it prevent a he says versus she says?
Well, you know, again, I think clear, cogent, and convincing is being chosen because it's a stronger evidentiary standard than preponderance of the evidence. I think it's probably where you would put the evidentiary standard in a bill like this, in a statute like this. Beyond a reasonable doubt would be the criminal standard, and it would almost imply that the only case in which you could do this is when there's been a criminal conviction. But again, not my area of the law.
Let me ask you this. Can you see my point? Can you see my point?
I can see your point.
Okay. And is my point a valid point?
You know, I think the sponsor of the amendment would probably be more familiar with how these cases go. You know, he is an attorney.
You're an attorney.
Yeah, but I'm not a family law attorney.
I'm neither. Yeah. I'm just a doctor. So.
Yeah. And I'm.
I'm thinking this.
I'm a doctor too, and I certainly don't deal with these sorts of medical cases at all. I used to spend quite a bit of time in emergency rooms, but I dealt with relatively few of these sorts of cases.
I probably am going to have to vote no on the amendment, and I don't know. I feel like I've beat the horse to death. I think the other members that have been listening at least understand the concern. You know, I have a feeling that the amendment will pass, because I haven't really got a clear answer from the two attorneys that this right. could be a problem.
Right.
Maybe
right.
it's a problem. Maybe it's not a problem.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill 800? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Butler, do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. Speak on the amendment.
You may proceed, Senator.
After listening to all the discussion, I'm still good on the amendment, and I encourage everyone to vote for it.
Thank you, Senator. Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 1? Does any other senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from 15th, you recognize close.
I close.
The senator from the 15th renews his motion that Senate Amendment Number 1 be adopted. As many in the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment is adopted. We are now back on Senate Bill 800. Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 800? Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 800? Senator from Butler, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
The senator from Butler renews his motion that Senate Bill number 800 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Next up, Senate Bill 796, Senator from the 15th.
I move that Senate Bill 796 be taken up for perfection.
The Senator from the 15th moves that Senate Bill number 796 be taken up for perfection. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from the 15th.
I now move that Senate Bill 796 be declared perfected and ordered printed.
The senator from the 15th moves that Senate Bill number 796 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator, do you care to explain your bill?
Yes. This is, so what we have is currently when you become a psychologist, you only can get accredited through the American Psychological Association. This just adds PCSAS as an additional one. It is something that is recognized by the Council for Higher Education Accreditation. It is something that where other universities, including Harvard, Northwestern University, University of Illinois, University of Arizona, Kentucky, UCLA, they all, numerous others, use this. And it is a situation when someone's wants to teach in our universities that they are prohibited from doing so if they are licensed through PCSAS in another state. And so this is something that was voted unanimously out of committee. We had this bill last year that passed through the body. And if there's no further questions, I will renew my motion.
Any senators desire to be heard on Senate Bill 796, Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Senator, please send your amendment forward, and has your amendment been distributed?
It is ready to be distributed. I'd like it to be distributed now. It's been printed. I ask for its adoption, and I move for a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Senator, you won't be able to close till that amendment is
distributed. I will not close until everyone's received the amendment.
Senator, you can explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this amendment ties in perfectly with this piece of legislation. It is based on a bill that just was passed through our committee with unanimous support and actually passed consent. It is a bill about suicide prevention and awareness with regard to licensure of psychologists and other mental health professionals. It requires that during their licensure process, they receive 2 clock hours of training in the area of suicide prevention and awareness. And with the exception of psychologists, the other mental health care professionals who are included in the legislation will need, but as part of their 30 to 40 hours of continuing education, 2 of those hours for their relicensure will be in the area of suicide prevention and treatment. It's an important bill. An important bill and an important amendment, knowing that Missouri has a high rate of suicide. I believe, I'm looking for my notes here, 14th in the nation. That per 100,000 population, we lose over 18 people to suicide per year. And the state ranks now, as of 2016, 13th in the nation for suicide. On average, Mr. President, one person dies by suicide every 8 hours in the state of Missouri. If anyone wants to take a look at the bill, it was Senate Bill 846, and that's what I'm asking to have amended on to the underlying bill that I, of course, support. If there are no questions, Mr. President, or even if there are, I renew my motion.
Does any senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 1? Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to inquire from the senator from the 15th.
I do. Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 15th, you may proceed.
I don't think I have any problems. It's just I literally just got this on my desk.
I know, and I apologize. I had wanted to speak to you earlier today. We just kind of pulled all of this together, and you were busy on the last bill. So please feel welcome to ask me any questions.
All right. So I see on your change in the title.
Yes.
The licensure of healthcare professionals.
Right.
Is there any other changes on these other pages after the first page? Or there is on page 6.
Right. Actually, so all the way through, it takes these different areas, and let me just tell you what they are. Psychologists, behavior analysts, professional counselors, social workers, baccalaureate social workers, and marital and family therapists. All of those areas of people work in the arena of mental health. So under their licensure portion of the statutes, It just adds these 2 clock hours of training into their requirements for their license or for their additional license once it's getting ready to expire.
All right. Yeah, I don't think I have any problems with your amendment. It looks good to me. I just wanted briefly to be able to look at it. So, all right.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Does any other senators desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 1? Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Barton.
I do.
Senator from Barton, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thanks, Senator.
Sure.
What committee did this, was this heard in?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that question, and I think it must have been health and pensions.
Okay. I hadn't seen it, and I was guessing it may have
right.
been there. Okay, so was it? Has it been exact out of committee?
It had actually.
It was voted
so
out.
It hasn't been brought to the floor yet.
Right.
It hasn't been turned in, but it was just voted out unanimously.
Unanimous
with
vote.
Consent
I thought
status.
You said it was, but I didn't remember the bill.
Right.
Okay, so it was vetted in committee and unanimously voted. It just
with
hasn't
consent.
Been. It just hasn't made the calendar.
Right.
Yet.
It's actually sitting on the consent calendar.
That's right. You did mention that was consent, so it would have had to have been unanimous. Okay. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr.
You.
President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 1? Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from the 24th, you recognize close on your amendment.
Just want to make sure that I give you the right information that that bill was passed through Seniors, Family, and Children Committee, not the one I had told you earlier, and I close. Thank you.
The senator from the 24th renews her motion that Senate Amendment Number 1 be adopted. Is many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment is adopted. We are now back on Senate Bill 796. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have an amendment. It has been distributed. I seek a waiver of the reading and move for its adoption. It ends in .02S.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. And, Senator, do you care to explain your amendment?
Yes. Mr. President, this amendment is identical to Senate Bill 733, which has been heard in the Licensing and Registration Committee. This is Psychology Interjurisdictional Compact. When folks move and are under the treatment of a psychologist and cross state lines, they can lose their therapist. And the idea of this compact is to establish a regime for how we let people keep their therapist for a limited period of time when they move. The first 7 states to adopt will promulgate regulations to apply to every other state that subsequently joins. As of today, Arizona, Utah, and Nevada have adopted. Colorado, Nebraska, and Illinois have the bill filed. So there is room for Missouri to get into that queue. The bill actually both the telepsychology piece and the underlying bill that the senator from the 15th has are already over in the Senate on a House vehicle. My language and the senator from 15th's language were already merged in the House on House Bill 1629, which includes language from Representative Swan's House Bill 1896, which is the same as this. And Mr. President, I need to make a correction to my amendment and pass forward the correct copy because of the title change made by the senator from the 24th, I need to send a version up that has that scratched out, if I may. We're not going to rechange the title.
Senator, please send your amendment forward with the corrected copy.
It's not the title I would have chosen.
Senator, in the first, you seeking recognition?
Yes, Mr. President. I would seek permission of the body to change the amendment by removing the title provision. That is my intent. And I think we just, I think, can we do that by unanimous consent? I have sent up the correct version with the title change crossed out. That is not what's been distributed. So I just, for the benefit of senators, want them to know that I'm not changing the title that the senator from the 24th has already changed.
All right, Senator, you're good to go now that you've explained that to the body. They understand that, so you're ready to go back on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll yield to questions in a second, but first I just want to reiterate the House has already passed the language that I'm bringing forward and the language that the senator from the 15th has in his underlying bill. So that's been done. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 2? Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to inquire the senator from the first.
Senator from the first, you yield to inquire from the senator from Barton.
I do.
Senator from Barton, you may proceed.
Thanks, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. So did we pass this last year?
Don't believe it has been passed by the Senate previously. I will let you know if I stand corrected on that. I'm sure somebody will get that information to me if it's... It looks like we might have three senators standing.
Looks to me like we do, Senator.
Three senators standing. Senator from the 23rd, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. With unanimous consent, I'd ask to introduce a special guest.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. To my left and your right, we have a former state representative, Vicki Schneider, who is from my county, St. Charles, and she has come to visit as a guest of the senator from the 5th today as well. So I would ask that the body make her feel welcome.
Let's please welcome the guest from the senator from the 23rd to the Missouri Senate Chamber. Senators, you may proceed.
The reason I was asking is this language looks very familiar, but the committee you said it came through, I didn't recognize. What committee did you say it came through?
It has been heard in the Licensing and Registration Committee chaired by the senator from Callaway. It has not been voted on by that committee.
No, but I'm trying to figure out why this language looks familiar to me.
It's been around. I can't say that it's been through the Senate before, but it's been around.
Okay.
I filed this bill last year, and it was heard last year, so that might be why you're remembering it.
It must have been. Do you remember what committee it was in last year, Senator?
Oh, you'd have to ask. It might have been the licensing committee last year. I don't know if you served on that committee at that time or not.
I did not. I wonder if it came through education.
I don't know that it would have.
Okay. Well, anyway, it looks familiar. As long as it's pretty much the same language, I know I was very comfortable with it then.
Well, and to that point, because it is an interstate compact, it is the same language in every state that's touching
it.
It has to be
the same. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Which isn't ideal, but we deal with that from time to time.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 2? Senator from Callaway, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the amendment sponsor.
Senator, in the first, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Callaway.
I do.
Senator from Callaway, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. So you and I have spoken about this, and it has many good qualities that I do like. The thing that concerns me, and we've spoken about this, is...
Right.
Because it's a compact, we cannot change any of the wording.
That's correct, including for what it's worth, the immunity from suit language, which you can probably imagine might not be my favorite part of the bill.
Exactly.
Yes.
The other thing is that my concern, and that's why we haven't voted it out yet, is because I wanted to speak with you about it. We didn't want a group to be able to come in from New York, Los Angeles, and put an office in with a large computer screen, that those groups could then take first patients and be able to treat them per telehealth without ever having met them.
Right.
And so I don't want some other group out of state to be able to take patients away from our home state, our Missouri psychologist. However, if you would look at page 1 on your amendment.
Yep.
Number 3 under 337.100.
Yep, I know the provision you're referring to,
so
yes.
So would you go over this?
Yes.
Can you explain this?
So it says this is intended, this provision, as well as any regulations that will be promulgated once the compact is fully in force, this provision is intended to keep telepsychology from running amok and being delimited, and it does that by imposing a 30-day limit. Now, the language says Compact is intended to regulate the temporary in-person, face-to-face practice of psychology by psychologists across state boundaries for 30 days within a calendar year and the performance of their psychological practices assigned by an appropriate authority.
So if some group from out of state came in and they advertise that you can come into this office, there would be staff there to check them in,
right.
But there's not a psychologist physically there.
It could be a video teleconference, yes, to somebody who would have to be licensed in another state, who would have to be subject to scope of practice and jurisdiction in our state.
Right. So does this mean they cannot treat that person longer than 30 days?
That 30 days within a year, yes.
Okay. So that would help the situation that I'm concerned about, correct?
Yeah. And to that regard, it says temporary. I'm not seeing it on page one, but
it is. I mean, it's at the end of the first line on number three.
Thank you. Yes, the temporary in person. Yes. So this is intended. This is not intended to be the way. This is going to be done industry wide. This is intended to facilitate when people move and want to keep their therapist. And that is the intention.
And I get that. If you have a psychologist, counselor that you really like and you've moved, but you want to be able to call because there's something coming up, I get that. Or the telehealth thing, or college students, or
at least
veterans,
until you can find somebody else, yeah.
Military, but that was my concern, that if we had large groups come in, then they really can't long-term take patients away from Missouri psychologists.
Well, right, and that's the idea, yes. And Senator, I think that's the reason why we, again, twice in two bills here today, well, I will say we're actually safer erring on the side of moving forward, because if we're one of the first seven states to adopt, Missouri will have a prime seat at the table for devising regulations to guard against that very concern.
And
if we adopt later, we won't.
So that's what, and I know you didn't know the answer, because I didn't know the answer. If we could put a caveat in there that say, XY, this is a concern for Missouri, is we don't want this group coming in, and let's say they have 10 psychologists on staff from New York. So one of them takes that client for 30 days, and then they pass it to their colleague for another 30 days, and they pass that person to another colleague for 30 days, and that person never really gets to meet someone face-to-face.
Sure. I hear your concern, and I think the point is that if you look at line 20, it says across state boundaries for 30 days within a calendar year, which I actually read to limit patients to 30 days of cross-state boundary receipt of services.
So explain that. You mean per psychologist or per
patient? Per patient. If I'm somebody who moves, right, and I change states, I can take advantage of this for 30 days within a calendar year. What I can't do is take advantage of it in 12 different states, 30 days at a time in a calendar year. We're even in the same state from 12 different psychologists. Yeah, it's 30 days per patient.
What about the quality of care for that patient if they never get to see a doc face-to-face? It's, well, by Skyping or telemedicine,
right,
they never have that physical contact,
right,
being able to go in and I don't know. It just seems very cold to me.
So a couple of things about that, and I hear your concern. The first is that, again, it's for 30 days. The intention is not for this to be a permanent state of affairs, so they're going to have to find somebody in state after 30. The patient is going to need to find somebody new in state within a month of changing states anyway. And in that regard, there's absolutely nothing to keep that from happening via Skype within the state. But the point is, the idea is that they would get back to face-to-face practice pretty quickly. The other point is the testimony that we heard in committee suggesting that there has been study, and I'm not the expert, but there has been study on the efficacy of counseling services face-to-face versus Skype, and the studies conclude that there's not a meaningful difference in terms of benefit to the patient. Now,
I do remember that, but that seems so bizarre.
I know, it seems counterintuitive, but it has been studied. And I think it's a very reasonable concern. I mean, I share that concern. What I don't want to do is have, when I live in the Metro St. Louis area where, you know, you can move 5 miles and move from being a resident of the Senate, of my Senate district, to being a resident of Monroe or St. Clair County, Illinois. And if you've got a psychologist that you're seeing in my district, I don't want you to land in Illinois, even though you're no longer my constituent, I still care about you. I don't want you to land in Illinois and have to immediately stop seeing your counselor. I want you to have the ability to come back to Missouri or call in and Skype from Illinois.
You can get set up with a new one, and right. I get the
That's
importance
the idea.
Of that.
Yeah.
I do. My concern was the health of the patient and to make sure that we have a shortage of psychologists here in the state now, especially in our rural areas, even at Fulton State
right.
Hospital.
Right.
And so to allow someone from out of state take
yeah.
clients away from our Missouri psychologists, I didn't want that to happen. I get that if we go in as state number 7, we get to help promulgate rules.
Right.
But how do I know that anybody's going to even address those?
No, I understand that. And the answer to that will be that here in Missouri, we're going to enforce Missouri laws. That's all I can tell you.
I guess I'll leave it up to the body on what they think is appropriate. I'm not trying to kill everything, but it is a concern, and that's why we hadn't voted on it yet.
And we had a very good discussion in committee, and I appreciate that discussion. We're going to have this language is already on a bill that's over in the Senate on a House vehicle as it stands. This is belt and suspenders.
If they thought about that or discussed it, but
there's 163 of them and 33 of us. So I don't know.
Well, we don't have, because we don't have broadband in the rural areas, we don't have the telehealth in the rural areas either.
Right.
And we don't have psychologists in the rural areas. So this is an issue for my district and others that are.
And I'll say this, Senator, and it goes to what the Senator from the 24th Prior Amendment does as well. I don't know what your experience has been, but I know that when I go knocking on doors in my community, one of the questions I always ask people is, what's important to you? And mental health issues are about the most common response I get to that. Oddly enough, I get a lot about prescription drug monitoring, too, but mental health issues are defining for the families that are dealing with them. And I find it's a very regular occurrence when I ask somebody that question. If that's an issue in their life, I'm going to hear about it. And, as a state, we want to be able to do more. We wish we could do more. We wish we didn't have the supply and demand challenges that we have in different parts of the state, because the demand is the need is great. I mean, others
You're
have
right.
talked about
it is great.
The importance of mental health services.
And so I've made my concerns known.
Sure.
Let the body decide what they want to do. I would hope that if this passes and we get in as at least one of the top 7s, that somebody would review how do we protect Missourians.
Yep. And Senator, I respect your concerns, and I think that patients across Missouri are well served to have conversations like this happen both in committee and on the floor of this body. I think that's what we're here for.
Thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator.
President.
Any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 2? Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment Number 2? Hearing none, Senator from the First, you recognize close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
The Senator from the First renews his motion that Senate Amendment Number 2 be adopted. Is many in the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The amendment is adopted. We are now back on Senate Bill 796. Does any senator desire to be heard on Senate Bill 796? Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from the 15th, you recognize close.
I close.
The Senator from the 15th renews his motion that Senate Bill 796 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Is made the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Next up is Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 814. Senator from Callaway.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 814 with Senate Committee Substitute be taken up for perfection.
The Senator from Callaway moves that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 814 be taken up for perfection. Is made the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, do you care to move for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute and explain the bill?
Yes, Mr. President. I move for Senate Committee Substitute be adopted. The Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 814 would change the notation on a person's driver's license if the person is hard of hearing and would have diminished capacity to discriminate speech when spoken in a normal tone. Currently, the notation on a hard of hearing person's driver's license is J88. The bill would change that to DHH for deaf and hard of hearing. This is so law enforcement would more quickly be able to identify what the notation means instead of J88, which has been known to frequently confuse law enforcement who may not have received training or forgotten the meaning of it. In addition, the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing is required to make an informal video in American Sign Language explaining the new notation. This video would be available in every license office via a posted QR code. The Commission and the Department of Revenue currently drafted the language for this bill, and 13 other states have passed similar revision bills to address the issue. Happy to answer questions.
Does any senator desire to be heard on the Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 814? Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from the Callaway, you are recognized. Close.
I renew my motion.
The Chairman Callaway renews her motion that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 814 be adopted. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Callaway.
President, I now move that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 814 be declared perfected and ordered printed.
You've heard the motion from the senator. Does any senator desire to be heard? Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none, Senator from Callaway, you're recognized. Close.
I renew my motion.
The Senator from Callaway renews her motion that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 814 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
President, without objection, Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees, and I'd ask you to recognize me for a report.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports from standing committees. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Please send your reports forward. Madam Secretary, please read reports.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 598, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Bill Number 743, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 894 and 921, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Bill Number 757, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully submitted, Senator Kehoe, Chairman.
Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will you please refer Senate Substitute Senate Bill 881, Senate Substitute Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bills 894 and 921 to Committee on Fiscal Oversight.
They shall be referred. Senator from Newton. Oh.
Sorry, Mr. President, I got to be smarter than the page here. Also, please refer Senate Concurrent Resolution 49, Senate Concurrent Resolution 50, and Senate Concurrent Resolution 51 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolution Ethics.
They shall be referred. Senator from Colton.
Newton done now?
Believe
Mr. President,
Senator
would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, I'd ask them to please be read.
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read the messages.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 1618, entitled An Act Relating to the Disposal of Unused Control Substances with an Emergency Clause. Emergency Clause adopted. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 2079, entitled An Act Relating to Coroners. Also, Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Bill 1265, entitled An Act Relating to Declarations of Candidacy, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. 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 Hearing none, Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned until 1400 Tuesday, March 6, 2018 AD.
The Senator from Cole moves the Senate stand adjourned till 2 p.m. Tuesday, March the 6th. All those in favor of that motion say aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate is adjourned till 2 p.m. Tuesday, March the 6th.